From West Virginia Public Broadcasting.
Support for the legislature today is provided by the following.
West Virginia University, online at wvu.edu. AARP West Virginia, your ally for real possibilities in the Mountain State. Online at aarp.org/wv. The West Virginia Higher Education Policy Commission, working to double the degrees produced annually in our state by 2025. Through increased opportunities for West Virginians to earn the credentials today's economy demands. The High Technology Foundation, building a stronger West Virginia, online at wvhtf.org.
At the legislature today, in this third full week of the legislative session, both chambers are poised to take votes on bills that could see vetoes from Governor Tomlin. One, to make West Virginia a right-to-work state. The other, to repeal the state's prevailing wage. We'll discuss those bills with the chairs of the House and Senate Government Organization Committees, our guests tonight, coming up on the legislature today. Good evening, I'm Ashton Mara. A crucial funding bill is caught up in the legislative process in the House. The bill, which was requested by Governor Tomlin, takes money from the state's rainy day fund to balance the 2016 budget. Revenue officials say the state will be hundreds of millions of dollars short by the end of June and may not be able to pay its bills without this piece of legislation. But as Liz McCormick reports, Democrats and Republicans in the House are still fighting over how the money should be spent. We start with a look at the controversy Friday.
Gentleman from the 58th.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Ashton Hannon's consent. The bill lie over.
Objection.
Objection's been heard. Gentleman from the 58th.
Mr. Speaker, I move the bill lie over.
Gentleman from the 58th moves that the bill lie over. All those in favor will vote aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Ayes appear to have it.
Roll call.
Senate Bill 364 should have been read for a second time on the House floor Friday, but a procedural move by House Majority Leader Darrell Coles held over consideration and discussion of possible amendments. Today, however, Republican leadership allowed the bill to be read for its second time, giving Democrats the chance to propose a change, but not without some heated debate. Senate Bill 364 would pool some $52 million from the state's rainy day fund to help balance the current year's budget. Governor Tomlin's budget officials say the state will end the fiscal year with a $384 million gap. But state leaders are constitutionally required to balance the budget each fiscal year. The Democratic amendment Monday would take an additional $58.5 million from the Rainy Day Fund to help offset cuts to PEIA, the Public Employees Insurance Agency. Delegate Isaac Spinagle of Pendleton County explains those cuts will lead to higher health care costs for state workers.
This is the first financial bill that's come before this House. It's an emergency situation. We are now on the 20th day of legislative session, nearly one-third through, and yet we have yet to address the PEIA funding crisis in the state of West Virginia.
Many Republicans, however, like House Finance Chairman Eric Nelson of Kanawha County, says PEIA is a priority for the 2017 budget, not 2016.
We are all very concerned about the PEIA shortfall. It's been projected that in fiscal year 17, so that's the year that starts July 1 and goes forward, it's projected that there's a shortfall of $120 million. There's not been legislation that has come before any committees yet, but I guarantee you there will be legislation to address that particular shortfall need. And there's many ways that we can do that. But let me just put a caution on this floor of the members. We're talking about using one-time monies out of our savings account, our rainy day fund, to fund an ongoing obligation. That hits it for 1 year. But what about the future years? That is not what we need to do here. We need to match ongoing sources or ongoing needs with regular sources, not one-time money. It's the wrong thing to do.
Republican Delegate Michael Folk of Berkeley County also spoke against the amendment.
Why should we be
dealing with something in the form of an amendment that's not even due until after July 1st. But now we talk about the crisis nature of PEIA. And the gentleman from the 50th mentioned it, and I think the gentleman from the 48th mentioned it. The reality is, there hasn't been any additional funding of PEIA since 2011. And it's not that they haven't needed it. The way they've gotten away from funding it is they've been paying down their reserves for multiple years. And they've gotten to a point where they can't do that anymore.
Delegate Don Perdue, a Democrat from Wayne County, supported the amendment and explained it's important to address the PEIA problem right now and not in 2017.
What we're trying to reach here is an understanding that things are bad for about 200,000 people, are going to get worse. And we have the opportunity to make a statement about what we believe is important for those people and for the state of West Virginia today. Not 2017 or 2020, today. It's been said more than once, we have a rainy day fund, and periodically somebody will come along and they say, well, it's raining. Well, yeah, it is. Why would we not access all the resources we have at our disposal to protect the interests of all of our citizens today, in this hour, in this moment, in this chamber?
Minority Leader Tim Miley from Harrison County claims Republican leadership are not prioritizing the PEIA cuts.
There is no plan to fix PEIA. And you know, want to know why there's not a plan? Because too many people have committed not to raise any taxes, tobacco or otherwise. And therein lies the problem. You're in a quandary. I've committed not to raise taxes of any kind. I'm purportedly committing to a fix that is going to come at some point in the future, though being a third of the way through the legislative session, we haven't even begun to work on one. There is no plan, and that's the concern. This is the beginning of a plan.
After nearly 2 hours of debate, lawmakers voted on the amendment. It failed 36-63. Senate Bill 364 will be up for a vote tomorrow in the House. Governor Tomlin's staff has said if the bill isn't approved by February 4th, the state will not be able to pay its bills through the rest of the fiscal year. For the legislature today, I'm Liz McCormick in the House.
Union opposed bills that made waves in the House and Senate in the first few weeks of the session have crossed the rotunda after votes to approve the measures. Now, both chambers are set to take votes on the provisions Thursday. In the House, it's Right to Work. In the Senate, a repeal of the state's prevailing wage. That bill was before the Senate Government Organization Committee this morning, but the fight over its economic impact also carried over onto the floor.
We need to keep a prevailing wage here in West Virginia.
Three contractors spoke against the repeal of the state's prevailing wage before the Senate committee. Glenn Jeffries was one of them. His company, Cornerstone Interiors, is based in Putnam County.
I am asking that we work together with the individuals who represent this industry and find a fair answer that is good for the West Virginia taxpayer, the West Virginia contractor, and the West Virginia construction worker.
A year ago, lawmakers were faced with the same issue, whether or not to repeal the wage rate. Prevailing wage is the hourly rate of pay and benefits construction workers are paid on government-funded jobs. Last session, instead of a repeal, lawmakers compromised and settled on a recalculation of the wage rate. But the question is back and facing just as much debate. Mike Davis is the vice president of G&G Builders, based in Scott Depot. He told the committee when the GOP took over the legislature in 2015, he hoped a change in leadership could fix the problems the state is facing.
With all the real problems that West Virginia has, it was decided that prevailing wage was the worst. It was the first item that needed to be took up. You decided the path of prosperity, in my opinion, was to lower wages.
That's what those opposed to a repeal say, that without the prevailing wage rate, the salaries of workers on government construction sites will be cut. The opposition also says out-of-state contractors will undercut in-state companies and bring in out-of-state workers for local jobs, and that the fatality rates on construction sites in states without a prevailing wage are much higher. Stephen White is with the Affiliated Construction Trades, and he explains why.
The reason is that when you cut wages severely and expect those workers to stay put and work for those wages, it does not happen. That is not the experience in other states. They will go to where the money is. They will leave to get the jobs, whether it's to Ohio, to Kentucky, to Pennsylvania, currently Maryland, prevailing wage states. And in comes a new workforce without the training programs, without the experience, without the knowledge that is critical for a safe job site.
Brian Hoylman with the Associated Builders and Contractors of West Virginia says those claims are false.
While it may sound likely that without a prevailing wage in place, anyone and everyone with a hammer in their hand or a bus full of workers with any level of expertise or from anywhere else can bid on a project for dirt cheap, but that simply isn't the case. We have stressed this point constantly and we will continue to, that your company and your workers must meet a series of qualification guidelines in order to even consider bidding on a state-funded project in West Virginia. Repealing the mandate would not repeal the law that requires workers and foremen to have OSHA 10 and 30-hour training before they enter a job site. It would not repeal the requirement for companies to perform state work to be bonded by the taxpayers to protect their investment. It would not repeal the inspection guidelines construction companies must undergo when building these projects. It would not give illegal migrant workers a legal status, and it would not remove the responsibility of the Division of Labor for enforcing those laws.
After allowing both sides to speak to the issue, senators still voted on party lines to pass the bill out of committee. But the debate spilled over onto the Senate floor with a motion from Senator Ron Miller.
I move today that we have a physical note on Senate, House Bill 4005.
Miller had requested the fiscal note in committee. It's an attachment to a bill that explains the impact a piece of legislation could have on the state's budget. He was told in committee, though, that it was too late to request one.
I'd asked for this in committee, and mistakenly, and it was a mistake, it wasn't intentional, I was told I could not offer that motion. It wasn't a germane motion, basically. And looking at the rules, Rule 15-2A, I believe is the rule number, it is germane, and it is something that we can discuss, and it is something that we should ask for, particularly when a piece of legislation has profound financial implications on this state, one way or the other.
Supporters of the legislation say a repeal would save taxpayer dollars by bringing down the cost per square foot of construction projects. But Miller, as well as other Democrats, like Minority Leader Jeff Kessler, say if that's the case, they want the note to bear it out. Kessler also wanted a second reference on the bill to the Chamber's Finance Committee.
I think a referral to the Finance Committee, which is your committee, Mr. President, charged with making sound public policy decisions concerning the state's budget and finances, would be an appropriate body to have that issue fully discussed, debated, and laid out so that we can see if there's any minds in this chamber that may change when presented with the facts. Because that's what this whole argument should be about, facts.
Both Kessler and Miller maintain the majority is pushing a vote quickly in order to override a possible gubernatorial veto. But on a party-line vote, 16-18, the request for the fiscal note was denied. The bill will likely be up for a vote by the full chamber Thursday. The bill to repeal the state's prevailing wage has now passed through two committees, one in the House and one in the Senate. Joining me to discuss this bill and others are the chairs of those committees, the Committee on Government Organization, Senator Craig Blair and Delegate Gary Howell. Thank you both for being here.
Pleasure to be here.
Senator, we didn't hear much from your party in that piece because I wanted to ask you some of those questions. So let's start with the concerns from Senators Miller and Senator Kessler about no fiscal note attached to this bill and not sending it to the Committee on Finance. Why'd you all make those decisions?
Well, those decisions was made as well last year. There was no fiscal note on it. And the fact of the matter is that I got to quit saying the fact of the matter. There's going to be money saved for the state. And I think it was more of a delaying process that by the minority to keep the inevitable from happening, and that is to move it out and go to the floor and have the discussion, which we're going to have on that. As the financial implications are good, but it affects counties, municipalities, the state, boards of education, for instance, and what is basically that I can gather from it, and from the short term of those under $500,000 projects that is now law, there is significant savings. It can be anywhere from 15% all the way up to 40-45%. It just depends on how labor intensive the job is. Now, that doesn't preclude that it's not going to be a union job. Unions have been equally been going out here and bidding the jobs, but what it does, it brings competition into play. And this is one of the things that we're doing in the legislature right now, is taking away, after 80 years of one-party rule that was a monopoly, we are putting in place competition. And it doesn't make any difference whether you're union, non-union, whether you're business, whatever it may be. It's all about leveling the playing field and making it so that the taxpayer out here, the person that goes to work, pays their taxes, pays their bills, and raises their family, that they're getting the most bang for the buck out of the government. And this year is a prime example when you've got $300+ million that we have shortfalls that we have to be able to figure out how to do to solve that. We've got to spend the money wiser. And one of the falsehoods that really burns me on this is the fact that union wages are going to go down. That is absolutely categorically false. If you're out here working on a private sector job, you have a union shop wage rate, and it's going to stay exactly the same. But somebody that is out here that's pushing a broom is not going to be ending up making $30, $35 an hour plus another $15 an hour in benefits. I would ask your listeners right now, how many of them today went to work and made $30 an hour? But yet on prevailing wage jobs where the state and the county and the municipalities and our boards of educations, when they were building, doing capital improvements, they had to pay that.
Well, the wage cuts are one of the concerns, and you say that that's not the case, but another concern is safety. States with, there are lots of union representatives, and we saw in that story, that say there are more fatalities on work sites in the states that don't have prevailing wage. Delegate, this came through your committee first. What's your response to those concerns?
The safety issues in West Virginia are not really an issue. A number of years ago, we had what they called the OSHA 10 bill. That was championed by Delegate Caputo out of Marion County. And what that did is, if it's on a state job, you're going to have the OSHA 10 training program, safety program. And that is the same safety program that the union employees have to take to be part of the union. So even the non-union contractors will now have that OSHA 10 training program because we passed that law a number of years ago. If it wasn't for that bill being passed a number of years ago, it would have been harder for us to pass the prevailing wage repeal because we would have had those safety issues. But thanks to, you know, Delegate Mike Caputo and really pushing for worker safety, we were able to repeal prevailing wage because of that.
So the response to the wage issue, it's not going to cut those wages. The response to the safety issue, we'll still have those safety standards in place. But we keep hearing from the majority that this is going to save the taxpayers' dollars. Senator, you just said it's going to save the taxpayer dollars. So I'll open the question to both of you. If those savings don't come from wages, where do they come from?
One of the places they come from is there's a massive amount of paperwork dealing with the prevailing wage. It has scared off a lot of smaller contractors. And the brief time that the prevailing wage was completely repealed and what we're seeing under $500,000, we're seeing a lot of small in-state contractors that never had the staff to deal with the prevailing wage. Plus, these contractors also have lower overhead. They are passing those savings on to the taxpayer, and they're still paying a good living wage for the people that are working for them. In some cases, they're actually paying higher than what the union scale is.
And if I may add, when the contractors bid a project, then they put X amount, a percentage, on the project. And so if you've got an inflated wage rates and everything, then that would take a project, then they add their, say they have to have 10% profit on that job. Well, then you've got an already higher number on the bottom that they're multiplying that onto. Now, when we're building schools, architects do the same thing. So now you've just compounded it again to where it's an additional cost. And this is where you end up. I'm from Berkeley County, and up there we build at least one school a year because of the population growth that we have here. And our Board of Education has been screaming for this for a long time, to be able to give them the opportunity so that they could do more with less. But there are the areas that where you save the money, and keep in mind that you have competition. I want nothing more than the workers in West Virginia to make more money. It's significantly more because our per capita income is about $10,000 less than our surrounding states. So if that's such a great thing, prevailing wage has been doing such a great job, why are we so low right now? We know the reasons for that. Number one, prevailing wage makes up a small percentage of that, and we don't have enough people in the workforce. This frees up more money to be able to go and do more projects in the state. And I think everybody knows where they've got secondary roads that need asphalt put onto them. We've got schools that need to be taken care of. We have libraries, courthouses. There's capital improvements everywhere out there that we could do so much for, even so much so that a city is doing a sidewalk out in front of people's homes, well, in front of businesses, not homes, excuse me, that the prevailing wage was paid until we brought this $500,000 threshold in. Now, it is the highest in the country, except for, I think there's like 24 other states that have no prevailing wage at all. So we're not the highest in the country, only those of us that have regulated. So this repeal will actually take us and bring us into the mainstream with the rest of the country.
Well, gentlemen, I want to get to a couple other issues, and one of those I want to touch on is home rule. And there is a bill that's set to go before your committee to eliminate the Home Rule Board and to eliminate the Home Rule Pilot Program, I guess you could assume, so that everyone in the state, every city in the state, could take part in home rule. Are you going to run that bill? Do you have any concerns with that bill?
Going to look at the bill. Do have some concerns with that bill. What we found is some of the cities have went in and did the 1% sales tax increase and then didn't do a deep corresponding B&O tax cut, which is what the bill or the home rule project was supposed to have happen. And the idea when that was put in, the legislature, it would be a seesaw. You cut the B&O tax as much as the increase in the 1% sales tax. The idea being that as those businesses became more profitable, they were able to hire more people, they expanded, and you got an overall tax increase by raising the tax, the base that people that are paying the tax, and not the tax rate. But give me an example, the city of Bridgeport went in and only cut it on manufacturing, and it was a $50,000 cut, and then put in a 1% sales tax that generated $3.1 million in revenue. It was a 62-to-1 ratio, and they didn't cut the tax on the people that are paying the tax. So now you've got increased business taxes, and that city's going to become less competitive with the areas outside, and it actually could cost jobs. That's one of the concerns that we have with eliminating the board right now. We want to go in and look at this closely.
So you still think it needs some oversight?
It needs some oversight.
Gentlemen, the chairs of the House and Senate Government Organization Committees, thank you for joining me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We shift now to Western West Virginia, where we take you to the 16th House District to meet your lawmakers.
Sean Hornbuckle was elected to the House of Delegates in 2014. He's a Democrat representing the House's 16th District. Hornbuckle is from Cabell County and serves as the Minority Vice Chair of the Veterans Affairs Committee. Delegate Hornbuckle served as the student body president at Marshall University in 2009. Carol Miller also represents the 16th House of Delegates District. She's a Republican from Cabell County. Delegate Miller was elected in 2006. She's the Assistant Majority Leader and chairs the Committee on Small Business and Economic Development. Jim Morgan is a Democrat from Cabell County. He represents the state's 16th House of Delegates District. Delegate Morgan was first elected to the House in 1988, serving until 1990, and was then appointed to his seat in 2001, winning election in 2002. Morgan serves as the minority chair of the House's Committee on Government Organization, a committee he chaired before the Republicans won a majority for the 2015 session.
Tomorrow on our show, the chairs of the House and Senate Health Committees join us to discuss the bills they'll take on this legislative session, including an initiative in the House to take on substance abuse with a special committee of its own. Delegate Joe Ellington and Senator Ryan Ferns join us tomorrow. This has been the Legislature Today. I'm Ashton Mara. Thanks for joining us.
Support for the Legislature Today is provided by the following.
West Virginia University, online at wvu.edu. AARP West Virginia, your ally for real possibilities in the Mountain State. Online at aarp.org/wv. The West Virginia Higher Education Policy Commission, working to double the degrees produced annually in our state by 2025. Through increased opportunities for West Virginians to earn the credentials today's economy demands. The High Technology Foundation, building a stronger West Virginia. Online at wvhtf.org. From West Virginia Public Broadcasting.